The war will never let you go, you know. It'll come back at all sorts of times. You finish up enlisting twice. Once for the war. And once for the nightmares.
That's a quote from a veteran of the Great War, World War I. But it could be from Afghanistan or Iraq, Syria or Korea. In fact, any theatre of conflict where men or women have served.
I really thought that it would be helpful for people to understand, if they had had veterans in their family, that they had also been affected.
Artist Anna Taylor knows this only too well. She's the daughter and granddaughter of veterans, and war had a traumatic impact on her family.
There's enormous potential for healing when families understand the effects of war in their lives. Then they can understand why the veteran behaved in the way that they did. And I have seen that. I have seen people heal. There was one man who I spoke with, and his father was only 16 when he was born. And he grew up in a family of three veterans, and his grandfather used to shake all the time if there was a loud noise. So he was completely aware of the effects of war. His father then went to Vietnam, came back an alcoholic, and he hadn't spoken to him for many years, I think. They'd been completely estranged because of this alcoholism. And when we finished speaking, he said, "I'm going home to ring my father."
For the last 6 years, Anna Taylor has visited the mothers, the grandmothers, the daughters, the sons of those who served in war and came back changed by that experience. The resulting stories are called Home Sweet Home, a memorial. And I'm standing with Anna in her kitchen looking at where some of those stories have ended up.
Oh, and I didn't tell you, this was my grandfather's cigar box.
Isn't it amazing?
Oh, really?
I do it on linen, because I really want there to be a connection with women and the domestic. So, and that was the embroidery as well to begin with, and also the title of the memorial is Home Sweet Home, so cross-stitch seemed very appropriate. But as I've continued, it's morphed into something else. And I no longer handwrite the books, I print them, because that way I'm able to give the families their stories back, and that's actually, I think the participants are the most important people in this. So I do that, yeah.
You've written down some of the key phrases that have come from your conversations.
That's right, yes. And one that I hear all the time is, "When he came back, he wasn't the same." So I've written that about over five or six pages. "Your father had to be dead to be recognised" is another one.
Just tell people what that book looks like.
This is in a wooden box. I put all of the books in old boxes of some sort.
You've spoken, I think, to mothers and grandmothers who thought they didn't actually have a story to tell you.
That's right. That's a really common response. "Oh, I don't think I've got a story." And I've spoken with Joan Tapscott, and she particularly said that to me. One of her comments was, "We just didn't twig that any of this was war-related." So she was able to understand. It helps people reframe their experiences. I think that understanding is profoundly healing. And she has five generations of her family who've been to war. So her father-in-law, uncles, her husband, cousins, brothers, two sons, and also a granddaughter who's been in Iraq.
That granddaughter is Sarah Archibald. And like Joan Tapscott, her grandmother, Sarah thought she had no story to tell. But she couldn't have been more wrong.
Well, I joined the army in 1999 after finishing year 12. Spent most of my time as a military police, but I went to Iraq in 2006, which changed me as a person. I was medically discharged in 2014 and have been dealing with PTSD ever since, yeah.
Where were you serving in Iraq?
I was in Baghdad, in Iraq. I worked at the Australian Embassy in Baghdad.
Is there anything about those moments in that time there that you've brought in to your part of the project?
For me, the post-traumatic stress came out of the humanitarian connection and seeing loss and suffering. And, you know, where I worked at the embassy in Baghdad was, we shared the same entry point to the main hospital there. So all the casualties would come in and...
Civilian as well, civilian casualties.
Yep, locals and also allied forces. And that was hard to watch. And, you know, I don't... You know, I've said before that, you know, they train us to be soldiers, but they can't train us not to feel. And, you know, that was really hard for me to grasp that, you know, I went there to do a role and my role was to help. And there were times where I couldn't. And that felt really, really hard. For example, we had a young girl come in to the checkpoint on a stretcher. She'd been hit by an IED and, you know, just you could
That's
see.
An improvised explosive device?
Yeah, yes. So, you know, she was playing on the street and, you know, that took her out basically, and she came through and, you know, you could see in her eyes that there was nothing that anyone could do for her. It was really heartbreaking to watch these people suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've written... I think this is your contribution here,
yes.
Part of your contribution. Would you mind reading that for me?
Lots of us don't feel worthy of having PTSD, the title. Younger veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan are finding it difficult to admit to having PTSD, as they often compare their service to that of the Vietnam, World War I and World War II veterans. We know what they went through and realise the atrocities they witnessed and were subjected to. PTSD is associated with being blown up and being in the trenches. Sometimes it feels that admitting to it means that you're not coping or that you're somehow weaker than everyone else. It's easy to forget that we are human and we can't just turn off our emotions. How do you dissociate from someone losing a child? Females in a non-combative role find it hard to wear the label of PTSD. They just don't feel worthy.
And is that what you came back with?
Yeah, certainly. It was probably one of the hardest things that I had to do was admit that I was struggling. And, you know, there's a sense of pride with being a soldier. And, you know, you kind of earn that right. And when you know in your heart and then have to admit that you're not fit to be a soldier, that's hard. That's hard to take. And I think we're probably hardest on ourselves.
You said earlier, Sarah, that, you know, the military can train you to be a soldier, but they can't train you not to feel. As hard as that has been for you to deal with PTSD, can I say thank you? Because if you didn't feel as a soldier, compassion, I think, would be a dangerous thing.
Yeah, no, thank you, firstly, and I absolutely agree. And I think that that's often forgotten as well, that soldiers do feel and they have to feel. And it's not only for those that we are trying to help or protect, but it's emotions that are hard to deal with, but as you say, if you didn't have them, it would be a different sort of thing.
How do you think the military has dealt with women coming back from the battlefield, such as yourself, with PTSD?
Look, I think everyone's still learning and adjusting. The military obviously recognises us as soldiers and veterans, but for me, I guess it was loss of children and loss of, you know, I kind of interpret that into my own life and, you know, sort of question, How do I protect my children? You know, and fathers certainly play that role too. But I just think as mothers and women, it's a stronger burden for us.
Did you become a parent after you got back from Baghdad?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I had two girls after Baghdad. Yeah, and that was probably one of my toughest periods was with the girls, and as they were sort of approaching those ages, you know, of children that I had dealt with in Iraq.
What were some of the things that were going through your mind at that time?
Some of the issues that I was dealing with, I say with, but still, it's feeling guilty for me having children, and particularly I had to deal with the mother and the father of this young girl, and, you know, I'd often have nightmares and flashbacks that he would come and try and take my children, that he'd, you know, want to get retribution, you know, because I wasn't able to help. Yeah.
And did you have someone around who could give you some professional insights into how to deal with that?
Yes, still do. It's, you know, constant. Yeah, it's constant. But, you know, I'm certainly better than I have been. Yeah, so. And look, I suppose, you know, from, you know, a broader sense, we've learnt as a family to understand it better, you know, and having dealt with my own issues and then, you know, through Anna's work as well, you know, we've been able to sort of open up dialogue that we haven't before, and, you know, understanding, you know, the range of emotions that come with having PTSD.
As a mother who's served in defence forces, do you find that when you, I guess, socialise in those parent groups that happen around young children, you know, there's daycare and after school and play groups and all that that goes with having young kids. Sarah, do you find it kind of difficult sometimes to just blend because you've had a different world experience than them?
Yes, would be the short answer. When I had both of them, I was still serving, so...
In Australia?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, so, but, and I was able to be a part of sort of some mothers' groups that were defence wives, and I kind of get lumped into that category as well. They'd often talk about their husbands or, you know, and whereas I was...
You were their husband.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a hard balance as well, you know, because you want to try and fit in, you know, and just be a mum and, you know, play, sing nursery rhymes and all that sort of stuff. But it's hard because you've got a past and you've got things that stand out for you that don't stand out for other people. You know, kids playing and just play centres, and that was just crazy chaos to me. And look, it is to most people, but it was just too much stimulation, and, you know, so people didn't understand, you know, why I didn't want to come there, or so there it was a fine balance, still is.
Yeah. So play centres with all that noise and sudden noise particularly,
yep.
You find that quite troubling?
Yeah, yep, that can be quite triggering, and I've had to, there's some parties that I've been to for the girls where I've actually had to leave and just say to one of the parents, look, I need to go outside for a moment, you know, because there's balloons popping and there's, you know, kids screaming and, you know, and to me that just takes me to a different place.
You're listening to Life Matters. Michael McKenzie here, talking to returned soldier Sarah Archibald and artist Anna Taylor. Anna's chronicled Sarah's story, along with her grandmother's and her uncle's, in a project called Home Sweet Home, a memorial. Over the last 6 years, Anna's created this to help families come to grips with post-war trauma. And these stories come from all kinds of settings and timelines. The accounts of Indigenous and non-Indigenous families dealing with the aftermath of massacres across generations. Their stories of cruelty and deprivation during the Boer War, of a family fleeing the tyranny of Uganda's Idi Amin, of Somalian refugees finding a new home in Australia.
I've got a Japanese lunchbox to tell the story of the crane story.
This is the 1,000 paper cranes, is that the story?
That's right, that's right. And part of the trip is that I will be delivering paper cranes that I'm going to be making with my local school to Hiroshima. I'll be taking those over. And the crane story came about when a young girl, she was two when the bomb dropped, and I think about 10 years later she had leukemia and she was dying. And the Japanese believe that if you make 1,000 paper cranes, you're granted a wish, and her wish was to live. And she didn't get to 1,000, but it has become an act for peace that has continued, and children from all over the world make paper cranes. So that's what I'll be doing with the kids, and I'm so excited about that.
You know, I've personally found a new appreciation for Nana and her job, and I've said to her, I said, Nana, how did you do it? You know, how did you not only have six children, but, you know, cope with, you know, your husband and, you know, everything that goes with it? So these women that kept the house, you know, are so strong, and I absolutely admire them, particularly my Nana, you know. And I sent her a message on Anzac Day, and I said, Nana, thank you for being one of the strongest women that I know, because truly she's amazing.
And what are you doing these days?
Being a mum. Being a mum, I still spend a lot of time in and out of hospital the last few years, but this has probably been one of my better years moving forward. So looking ahead and working on a project myself, just to sort of share that message as well. Yeah.
So in some ways, this project that Anna brought to your family has been the trigger for you to seek more catharsis, more release, not only between members of your family, but for you individually with your own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's made me sort of look back and draw on my poppy, my uncle, my dad was National Service. Those things that we have in common are our army values, you know, and that's something that sort of transcends through our family, and something that's really actually gotten me through. You know, I said to someone, I said, the army broke me, but it was also the values of the army that healed me. So it's been a really full circle in terms of, you know, holding on to what I know and, yeah, trying to move forward.
Sarah, it's been really great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
Where is this memorial going?
I'll be taking it to Japan, to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, then to London and Oxford, Paris, Berlin, New York, and Vancouver. So it's a sort of 9-week experience, yes. Bit scary.
You realise that the kind of questions I've been asking you and I've been asking of Sarah today, you're going to be bombarded for weeks with these questions. Ready for that?
I am, yes, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that aspect of it, yeah.
Because you'll be sitting there with the memorial, won't you?
I will, definitely. And I've decided if I can't find a venue, I'm going to set up on a footpath somewhere. It will, and because people talk when they see these things, they just come up and talk. War is universal, doesn't just happen to us. So it's vital that everybody is represented in these stories.